This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
When it comes to earning and redeeming points and miles, how do you know you're making the best decision? Should you chase the highest cents per point, aim for the lowest out-of-pocket cost, or just book what feels right? In this episode, we're diving deep with points and miles expert Julia Menez of GeoBreeze Travel to break down exactly what you should be tracking and what you can ignore to get the most out of your rewards. If you want to fly first class for nearly free or just stretch your budget to travel five times as much, this episode will help you refine your strategy and travel smarter.
Imagine pursuing your dreams of exploring the world's most exquisite destinations without the extravagant price tag. This is the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, hosted by DeAndre Koch, founder of Boldly Go and an expert in financial planning as recognized by Forbes. This podcast is your bridge to a world where travel savvy meets luxury. With DeAndre's unique financial planning perspective, you'll glean insights on making the most of credit card loyalty points and miles for travel that doesn't just move you, but takes you places that you may have never thought possible. Expect the most up-to-date credit card strategies for points and miles, stories from successful professionals on how they integrate travel into their busy lives, and other captivating stories from around the globe. Whether you're a seasoned traveler or just starting out, join us in exploring the best of global travel and learn how to experience nearly free luxury travel around the world yourself. Your journey transforms here, igniting our revolution in the world of travel.
Welcome to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast. I am your host, DeAndre Koch. Today, I've got a fantastic guest with us, Julia Menez, who is the founder of GeoBreeze Travel. You've probably heard her podcast because she is an OG in the points and miles game. I think, Julia, your podcast is over 220 episodes, and I know that you're an absolute expert in all things points and miles. So super excited to have you on the show today. I know that we're going to be able to take this a little bit more beyond just the beginner level when it comes to points and miles and cover a lot of really great things. So Julia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I am so excited to be here today.
So Julia, I like to start off every episode just asking, where are you currently? Where are you from? And how did you get into the world of travel, points and miles, all that fun stuff?
Where am I currently? I am currently at home in Las Vegas. Where am I from? I'm from Blue Springs, Missouri. I'm Filipina. So usually when people ask where I'm from, they mean where are my parents from? And they're from the Philippines. How did I get into points and miles? I got into it through the world of FIRE and financial independence and retiring early. And as I was reading through all of those blogs back in the 2010s, some of them were mentioning getting to travel mostly for free or heavily discounted by using points and miles. So I was like, is that real or is that a scam? But sure enough, it works out pretty well.
That's awesome. So Julia, you've built an incredible platform with GeoBreeze Travel. I know you help people maximize their points and miles strategies. And I know you coach travelers on how to make the most of their redemptions, right? Whether that's getting the highest cents per point, minimizing out-of-pocket costs, or unlocking luxury travel experiences that they may have never thought possible. But here's the thing. All of these goals don't always align perfectly all the time, and trying to optimize for everything at once can definitely be overwhelming. So I'd like to break it down and just start with, when someone starts planning a redemption, how do you help them decide which of these metrics to prioritize in the space of points and miles?
So when someone's planning a redemption, I think first it's important to establish, do you want to be the kind of person who tracks metrics? I used to be an actuary in a former life, so I am all about trying to see, is this optimized? Are we optimizing for the correct thing? And how can we iteratively improve with each year or with each trip? If that sounds like hell to you and you don't want to track numbers and you're like, I'm just in this for fun, that's completely fine. Like, YOLO, points are meant to be fun and bring joy to your life and not be an added source of stress. But if you are sitting there thinking, I am not currently getting the travel that I want based out of the points that I have, it might be good to take a little bit more of a mathematical and analytical and quantitative approach. So we'll start there with, should you even bother checking metrics at all? Only if you're not getting all of the travel that you want and if you feel like something's missing. So to analyze what metrics you should even be tracking, there are a few different styles that we can talk through. There are people where you're like, I just want to minimize costs as much as possible. Economy is fine. I just want those Hyatt redemptions where if I'm paying on points, I don't have to pay any fees or anything. It's just $0. That's fantastic, even if it's a category one. Or you want to fly something like Southwest Companion Pass, where if it's domestic, the taxes and fees would be $5.60 per person. You can get buy one, get one free flights using the Southwest Companion Pass, even when booking on points. That would be for the kind of person who really wants to minimize cost. And the main metric that they are tracking is how many dollars out of pocket did I have to put out for this trip? So I guess we'll start there. And there's a few different metrics, but do you have any follow-up questions on people who are just there to minimize costs?
Yeah, I think a lot of people that get into this space are more so in that, you know, realm of trying to minimize costs, as you mentioned. And a lot of what I talk about, I think we talk about in general within this community, right, is the nearly free travel, which is a big pull for a lot of people. But that being said, not everyone in this space is a financial advisor or a former actuary or a data analyst. And so the number crunching, as you said, probably sounds like hell to them. So my question for you is, how do you approach it? I mean, are you grinding out every single number still this long in this world of points and miles? Or have you gotten more to, okay, I've been doing this long enough. I just want to enjoy knowing, I just know that I'm getting a good deal kind of intuitively.
The opposite, actually. I started just by doing this intuitively where I was like, oh, let's just do some redemptions. Let's just follow some directions on a blog, kind of look at them like recipes and then transfer points around there. I was not tracking before. I track a lot more diligently now, more so just for the transparency on my YouTube channel of what does this actually cost? And when you see all of the videos about, oh my God, it was nearly free, or we flew for only $43 or something like that, yeah, plus hundreds of thousands of points. And there are positioning flights that are often involved. There are taxes and fees. There are transits between different hotels and flights and everything. And sometimes it's just not worth it to do points. So we take advantage of cheap cash rates. So I track a lot more diligently now, mostly for the content and for YouTube. What I track for myself, I track a few different metrics. So I do track out-of-pocket costs. I track cents per point, which we can talk about. And I also track the ratio of my out-of-pocket spend divided by the sticker price of the trip. Personally, I aim for that number to be under 10%. So if I have a budget of $10,000 for travel for the year, I'm going to try to stretch that and get more than $100,000 of sticker price value when you're looking at if somebody were to just try to recreate this, being like, I'm not going to bother with points. If I just bought the exact same flights and the exact same hotel stays that she bought, how much would that just cost out of pocket following the itinerary to the letter? I want that ratio to be under 10%. And that is for a couple of reasons. One, I think it dissuades people from the obsession with lowest cost, because something else we can talk about is credit cards with annual fees. Some people are obsessed with the no annual fee ones, and they're great, but they do have limitations. And so I often ask people, would you rather spend $0 and get $100 back in value, or spend $100 and get $1,000 back in value? And if you don't have $100 to spend, that's completely fine. But I like the 10% ratio of cash you spent versus sticker price, because it also kind of puts into perspective what it takes to make these aspirational dream trips happen. I think there's so many people on the internet who make it seem so easy to save $50,000 or $100,000 to people on the internet and their followers who don't currently have $5,000 saved up, who do not have $5,000 in a checking account to meet a minimum spend, to pay these fees. And I think that's a bit of a disservice to our community. So if you have any type of budget for travel and your goal is instead to spread it and get five times as much travel as that budget would normally allow, or 10 times as much, or 20 times as much, just something where you recognize you do have to have some dollar input in there, I think that really opens up a new perspective for how to approach the world of points and miles rather than just being like, I want to be as cheap as possible.
I really love how you staged it that way because, you know, from the lens of a financial advisor, always preaching every opportunity I can through this podcast and through social media and through our newsletter and blog, all the different things, is financial responsibility, fiscal responsibility. And now, granted, to travel, we can't literally travel for 100% free. There are costs at all times. You know, at the very minimum, even if your hotel was all on points and your flight, for some reason, you got all on points with no taxes and fees, we still have food. We can't pay for food with points, right? There's still expenses there. So I love how you brought out that, you know, to let someone figure out their travel budget and what that travel budget is for the year. And understanding that it doesn't have to be that you have to have a $20,000, $30,000 travel budget. It can be $10,000. It can be $5,000. It can be $1,000. But what type of trip could you take if you know, using your own ratio there, that you're trying to only use 10% of cash worth of value in your trip? If your travel budget's $1,000 for the year, what type of travel experiences could you have if you're getting $10,000 of value for the year with the travel, or for you, $10,000 getting $100,000 worth of travel value for the year? So I think that's absolutely huge. And it is always important to go back to making sure that people recognize financial responsibility is always a key and has to be forefront, because we can't be pushing the travel lifestyle and pushing people to go into debt to afford the travel lifestyle because they can't afford to hit the minimum spend on these cards, or they can't afford to cover the fee for a card. So all really, really great points, Julia. So transitioning a little bit now to the conversation around cents per point and maximizing the value there. Can you kind of just start off in general and help people understand, help the listeners understand, what does the cent per point really mean? And do you feel like that's the best metric to go off of?
So what cents per point is it's a ratio. It's probably one of the most common metrics that people talk about on the internet, where they're like, how much value did I get per point? And it's often measured as if you take the sticker price of your flight or your hotel and subtract from that number any taxes or fees that you have, take that whole quantity and divide it by how many points did you pay instead of money. Most people would say that with your flexible points, aim for at least 2 cents per point. And there are a lot of people on the internet who are like, I've gotten 5 cents per point, 10 cents per point, 17 cents per point, 45 cents per point, crazy high ratios of how much value they were able to extract out of their points, which is fantastic for them. I have a lot of these videos as well. I have a whole video on different real life examples where I've gotten more than 10 cents per point. But I think that as far as it being the best ratio, I think people jump through too many hoops trying to maximize cents per point. And I don't think they know why they're doing it. From what I can tell, a lot of people think it will let them into some exclusive club where we all bow down and we're like, oh my God, you got 70 cents per point. You are amazing. And you are now the popular kid at the lunch table, which in reality doesn't actually happen. It doesn't happen in real life. It doesn't happen on the internet. It definitely doesn't happen in real life. If you just think about the 5 people that you text the most and then you just text them like without any context, do this as an exercise. Everybody listening, I got 15 CPP. What do you think your friends are going to think that means? Like most people, they don't care. They don't care about cents per point. So while it is good to be wary of how much you're getting out of your points, making sure that they're getting you a lot of value, that you're not just squandering them and spending them on magazines, more isn't always better with cents per point because it involves a lot of nuance of what did it cost to get that kind of benefit. It's always important to do those kinds of cost benefit analyses, because if you traveled to a place you didn't want to go to on a flight that you didn't want to take and you didn't even have a good time, but you can say you got a good math ratio to people on the internet who you don't know and who do not care about you, was that really the best metric? I would argue not.
I love that in so many different ways. So there's so much to unpack there, right? You're at the base of it. You're 100% correct that there's so much more to extrapolate from just cents per point, and how many people are really going to understand the importance of that outside of perhaps for yourself and myself that have an audience, right? It is beneficial for us to share what those things are. Now, you mentioned, 45 cents per point. If you've ever gotten that, Julie, I mean, I know you're on another level. Congrats. I think the best I've ever gotten to was somewhere between 15 and 20, which again is great. But outside of like our community, I think if I were to text you, you probably would give me a big thumbs up back. So at least you would know what that meant. But right, that's not really super exciting for most people in the real world. And for listeners out there, we do actually have a tool on our website, our point redemption calculator, that actually will show you what your cents per point is. But going back to the basic of what you said, right? So strive for two or more. So how do you determine whether you should go for points or go for cash? And what if the points you can get, the 2, the 3, the 5 cent per point, but may take you a little bit longer on your route or take you a little bit more out of your way? How do you determine whether it makes sense to still stick with the points option?
Well, I think it's important to decide if that longer route is a pro or a con for you, because some people are like, I want more time in this plane because it's fantastic to be served caviar and champagne. So if you're like, well, you got to go in the wrong direction for a couple hours and then go to Europe or Asia or wherever, some people are like, done. That's more time in the cabin that I want to fly. So first decide, is that actually a pro or con for you? When deciding on flights and what point should I do cash, blah, blah, blah. Here's the framework that I usually use for myself and my husband. So I will ask him, hello, husband, when do you want to take vacation next? And he will name a month when his vacation bank will have replenished itself. And let's say August. I will Google what places in the world are nice to travel to in August. So Europe is great in the summer. Great in August. If he says February, I probably don't want to go to Finland. So then, let's say we want to go to Europe in August. I will find some way to get across the ocean with points in business class that is a satisfactory points redemption for me. And that could be based off of a few things. Maybe it's got a high cents per point. Maybe it's an airline I haven't gotten to fly yet that's still on my bucket list. Maybe it's a direct flight from Las Vegas and we get to avoid doing any positioning flights. So there's a lot of different things. But mostly it's probably just going to depend on what's available around the time that we want to travel to the continent we want to fly to. And then I'll repeat the same process on the way back. Oftentimes we are flying back from a completely different country than the country we flew into. And then I have to figure out the connecting pieces and the positioning flights and hotels and everything there. But once you have your flights over the ocean and back over the ocean, all set, then you're good to go.
So I'm curious when you're doing this, because oftentimes I find myself battling between kind of two different objectives when it comes to the points I'm about to use, especially when coming back from a trip, which is, do I get back faster or do I get back cheaper? And cheaper can be both less cost with actual cash and with points. So how do you tend to balance that you find yourself, right? Because there's ways that you can use points, drop your cost down to a couple hundred bucks versus $1,000 or $1,500 for business class experience, but you've got five legs versus two. How do you kind of balance that for yourself personally, for you and your husband, from both an efficiency side with time, but an efficiency side with money standpoint?
I think it largely depends on what are your priorities. My priority is not minimizing out-of-pocket costs by any means. If it's like $1,500 in taxes, but it's a first-class, amazing redemption with the showers and the rooms and the fancy beds and the caviar and pajamas and amenity kits and everything, like YOLO. We're at a point in life, luckily, that my husband and I are not trying to minimize out-of-pocket costs. As far as routing, I can do like a couple legs, but if it's like three connections on the way back, I'm just not going to do it. I would rather just fly to a different country and know that going forward, where maybe we fly into Korea and there's nothing good on the way back from Korea. Maybe we have to go like Korea to Japan to Canada to Los Angeles to Las Vegas. We're not going to do that. I would rather just say there's a direct flight from Hong Kong to Los Angeles. I'm going to figure out a different flight in the middle to get from Korea to Hong Kong. So I'll structure it more that way, where I'm looking for what's the best flight that I can get over the ocean, because those are the ones that I really care about. As far as intra-Asia or intra-Europe flights, they're all going to be pretty bad most of the time, with some exceptions.
Got it. And I think a someone with children would probably say something similar, right? If you've got a couple young kids, whether toddlers or teenagers or anything in between, you're probably not going to want to have to deal with dragging them through multiple security checkpoints, multiple baggage claims, trying to layer through three or four stops on the route home versus let's get back as efficiently as we can. So there's less crankiness and less time sitting around an airport, even if you're in the lounge. So I can absolutely understand that aspect.
Yeah, I jump on a lot of sales calls and coaching calls where people, where they're like, oh, but it's like $200 extra or $300 extra. And please, everyone, keep in mind, my clients can easily afford that. Like, if they're one-on-one clients of ours, they have the income to be able to afford an extra couple $100 in taxes for a more efficient route. And whenever someone's like, eh, it's a couple $100 extra or $300 extra, usually I will just counter with, is that what you would like to optimize for? And if the answer is yes, there's no shame. But if you're countering every single thing and every time somebody gives you an alternative with, but what's the price of it and how expensive it is that what you want to optimize for in travel? Because if so, I don't know if points are really the thing to be paying attention to. You could just go for cheap cash flight deals. I mean, the bottom is getting lower and lower. There are tons of cheap cash flight deals. You can hop all over Asia with AirAsia. They're super cheap. There's always a way to get it cheaper. But you have to ask yourself, is that what you want to optimize for? And if the answer is no, I would not counter every single suggestion you come across on the internet with, but what is the cost of that? Because I feel like it's a sad way to experience travel. If you're like, what is the cheapest possible way we can experience this country that we might not be able to come to again for the next 10 years?
Great point. Absolutely great point. So when talking about your husband's schedule, you mentioned that basically you would ask him when his availability is. He would pick a month. Let's just say it's August, and you would figure out or Google the best country to visit in August. And typically it's going to be a Europe or whatever it may be. That's a great time to go to Iceland. That's when I went to Iceland. Iceland in November or December is much colder, right? So you figure things out that way. My question for you, Julia, is, do you find that to be one of the best ways to get some hidden value to maximize that cent per point? Or do you have any other ideal tips to get the most bang for your points without overcomplicating the process, which is key?
Yes. If you want to optimize for cents per point, there are a few kind of guidelines. For hotel redemptions, I do a lot of those Hyatt suite upgrades where it's 9,000 points. You pay the base rate. It's 9,000 points a night, and then you get a premium suite. It's not completely free, oftentimes very far from, where maybe you're paying $700 a night plus 9,000 points, but getting a $3,000 suite. That's a pretty high cents per point if you want to run the math on the side while listening to this podcast. Another strategy is if you can time it with transfer bonuses, a lot more stars have to align if you want to chase transfer bonuses. You cannot be that picky on destination and timing and all of that, but that's another way to stretch your points out further. I think our highest cents per point redemption is around 27 cents per point. And I redid the math and you can get up to 60,000 on this depending on the cash price of the day. And it involves waiting for a built transfer bonus because those transfer bonuses, you can get 100%, 125%, 150%, maybe more depending on the rent day special. So we transferred points from built to Virgin Atlantic to fly Virgin Atlantic upper class from London Heathrow directly back into Las Vegas. It was fantastic because it was a direct flight home at the end of a long trip. Virgin Atlantic flights tend to be pretty expensive. And given that we only needed about half of the points transferred over versus what it would usually cost, we got a huge cents per point valuation on that. So if you want to play the built game and store those built points for when there's one of those really good rent day specials, that is another way to really maximize your cents per point. And then jumping on first class deals whenever you can. This one's much harder to do, especially if you have more than one person traveling. But that Chicago to Dubai route, I think now on the Emirates Game Changer, it's expensive. It's 163.5 or 168.5 thousand points per person one way in first class, plus $800 or $900 in taxes and fees on top of that. But the sticker price is $13,000 or $14,000 or $15,000 depending on the day. So that is still like 8 or 9 cents per point on that redemption. So those are a few different strategies where you can use the Hyatt upgrade rates with 9,000 points per night, time your transfer bonuses, especially waiting for the built transfer bonuses. And then if you can do those first class flights that would normally have very high sticker prices, those are some ways that you can maximize cents per point if that is what you want to optimize for.
Hey everyone, I hope you're enjoying this week's episode. DeAndre here, and I just wanted to interrupt briefly to remind you of two things. First, be sure to sign up for our newsletter where we give you direct access to travel updates, news you'll want to jump on in the points and miles world, and our continuously updated card offers to maximize your travel rewards, often before they're ever mentioned in the show. Also, if you didn't already know, we have a private Facebook group where we share news as it breaks, ideas, and other things that don't make it into the newsletter or show many times. And that's the best place to get your points and miles question answered directly by me and other travel enthusiasts. Both of these links will be in the show notes. Now, back to the show. Well, let's transition a little bit, because what if it's less about optimizing cents per point, because flying the Chicago to Dubai or JFK Dubai route, where you're getting an 8 or 9 or 10 cent redemption, but you're paying $1,500 in taxes and fees and you're blowing through a wad of points for somewhere that you might not be that interested in going, is not ideal for everybody. So their goal, instead of optimizing or maximizing cents per point, is to minimize the out-of-pocket cost. What would be your recommendations of how to best start there? Because obviously taxes and fees are a big portion of what is combined with points, especially when it comes to airfare.
Look into the Hyatt rates for standard rooms, because you won't have to pay any taxes or fees, whether you're doing a Category 1 Hyatt house or a Category 7 Park Hyatt. Just getting the standard room, you're good to go there. So that would be my recommendation for hotels. For flights, if you can fly domestically within the United States, Hawaii is a great destination for this as well. And then you're flying on an American carrier, you can oftentimes find rates where the taxes and fees are only $5.60 that way. So for example, if you wanted to fly from Newark over to Johannesburg, South Africa, United has some routes on that where it's, I think, 88,000 points plus $5.60 per person one way. Now, keep in mind, it could be a lot more on the way back, depending on where you're flying from. London Heathrow is notorious for their high fees. But at least on the way out, if you can fly on a US-based carrier, that's where you're going to find a lot more of those cheaper taxes and fees. Now, keeping in mind, a lot of people get into the world of points and miles so that they can experience a lot of these much more luxurious and glitzy foreign carriers. So somebody might be like, yeah, I know that I can fly over to New Zealand with American Airlines or fly over to Australia with American Airlines and the taxes would be lower, but I kind of want to see if I can experience Qantas or Fiji Air or one of the other carriers. There's a lot of American Airlines flights over to Japan, $5.60 for taxes and fees a lot of time. But a lot of people are like, but I would much rather try Japan Airlines or ANA or that Fifth Freedom flight on Singapore Airlines from Los Angeles over to Narita. So that's something to balance as well, is do you want to optimize for the cheapest possible option and be flying American Airlines when you could instead be flying Singapore?
So I think that's fantastic, because a lot of times we are searching for, as you said really well, right? The glitz and the glam, the Emirates, the ANA, the JL, all these high end or these brands that we never get to fly when we're flying throughout the country. But getting your taxes and fees lower for someone could be the game changer for them, because now for a family of three, they're spending essentially $18 out of pocket plus points versus having to come up with a few hundred dollars out of pocket for the same type of flight, or at least the same destination, not the same flight. Obviously, the flight experience would be different. And I think it's really important to mention what you talked about with London Heathrow, because to your knowledge, is there any other airport that's known to be as expensive with taxes and fees as London Heathrow is?
Not consistently. That is the one where, like, consistently we see that it's much more expensive than a lot of the other destinations. There are some ways to get around that. Like, LifeMiles doesn't pass on the fuel surcharges, so their taxes tend to be lower if you book through Avianca LifeMiles. But today, they devalued their chart again, so a lot of the sweet spots are not nearly as good. So I'd shop around for that one.
when it comes to budget-friendly redemptions, are there some underrated programs or transfer partners that you know of out there that are really, really beneficial for low out-of-pocket costs?
Maybe not always for low out-of-pocket costs, though it's pretty low, but transferring your Citi points or Wells Fargo points over to the Choice Hotels program is great, because those two programs will transfer over at a 1-2 rate. So with your Choice points, if a hotel is listed as 16,000 points per night, you only need to transfer over 8,000 points. Now, Choice Hotels are not the most luxurious. It's a lot of those like Clarion Inn kind of things where in the US, we don't pay too much attention to it. But I do highly recommend this if you're going to Scandinavia or Japan, because the rooms are going to be small anyway if you just want to throw your bag in and then go explore the city. I think Choice Hotels are really underrated, especially for people who like to do budget travel.
Now, I know your first thing you mentioned was transferring points or using Hyatt properties, because with Hyatt, obviously, you don't have to pay taxes and fees when you use your points, especially with the standard room rate for a point booking. In your experience, is Hyatt the only one that does that, or do all the hotel chains allow you to book and not have to worry about paying taxes and resort fees and all the other things?
Definitely not all of them. Marriott charges a lot of fees. I've had to pay a lot of Marriott fees. Those are the two that I play most with, is Marriott and Hyatt. I think Wyndham is also pretty good about not paying a whole bunch of fees, but I could be completely wrong on that. So let me know in the comments if Wyndham actually does charge fees.
Perfect. So we're going to take it up a notch, right? So we just talked about minimizing costs and kind of having more of a budget experience. How would you say is best to maximize luxury while keeping costs minimum? Any recommendations there?
If you want to maximize luxury and you want to fly a lot of those flights that you see people post about, like Singapore Suites or Emirates First Class Game Changer, blah, 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 you need to track what routes they actually fly. So many people are like, I check every day and they never have Singapore Suites open from Los Angeles or San Francisco or New York or anywhere else in the US. Yeah, unfortunately, those A380s no longer fly to the US. So you have to track where those planes actually fly. The easiest ones to catch those on, we book a lot of clients to and from Australia between Sydney and Singapore on the Singapore Suites. We do India. There's some to Shanghai and Hong Kong as well. So tracking the routes and making sure you're familiar with where do those things actually fly, that's going to be really helpful for you. Also, for experiencing luxury but minimizing cost, you don't have to fly from the US across the entire world in that first class flight. Yes, it would be nice, but if you just want a taste of the luxury, I flew the Emirates A380 first class from Cairo, Egypt to Dubai. It was 4 hours, but on those 4 hours, I was like, I need pajamas. I need the Bulgari amenity kit. I need to shower. I need caviar. I need Dom Perignon. I got to experience everything very condensed in a 4 hour flight. It was 63,000 points and maybe like $200 in taxes and fees. So very affordable. It was a short flight, but I did get to experience that luxury and get a lot of B-roll for my Instagram content with just a 4 hour flight there.
So I'm super jealous because we also had a five hour flight in Emirates first, and that was Maldives to Dubai. However, that was a 777. So I got all the things minus the shower. So that's still out there. I still have to take a shower on a plane. That's still on the bucket list to do. I'm very curious though, Julia, because I know your whole kind of business and world is in the points and miles and travel, right? So the content creation, all of that's all included of what you do, plus working with clients. I'm super curious. That flight specifically on the A380, did we take that because of the flight itself, or did it happen to be that you were already planning to go to either Cairo or to Dubai or somewhere adjacent in your travels at that time?
I planned that flight because I had points stuck with Emirates. This is another crazy story. So on a flight, we had booked Emirates business class from Milan back to JFK. And you can upgrade when you check in to the front desk for about 30,000 points. I think that's what it still costs.
Yep, that's exactly what I did to get the business to first class Mali to Dubai. That's exactly what I did. So exactly 30,000 points still.
Yes. So we got to the Milan airport 4 hours early. I approached the desk and I was like, hi, is there first class availability open on our flight? And she was like, yeah, there is. It's 30,000 points per person to upgrade. I'm like, sweet. I'll transfer over 60,000 points. It didn't transfer in time. So 2 days later, we were back home, and then I had 60,000 points sitting in my Emirates account. And I'm like, what am I going to do with this? And I was like upset with Emirates at this point, or Amex. I was just upset. So I was like, what's like the cheapest thing, or like what's the best redemption I can get with Emirates for 60,000 points? And I saw you can fly first class from Egypt to Dubai for 63,000 points. And I was like, cool, I'll just transfer over another 3,000. I'll book this. My husband can sit back in business class because we're not going to try this upgrade game again. I am not going to get those points stranded with Emirates again. So that is how that whole thing came to fruition.
That is so interesting. I could actually imagine that feeling, though, because when I went to ask the flight attendant the same exact question, and she was like, yes, it actually might be 33,000 points. So it might have gone up a little bit in points. But I pulled out my iPad because I was like, I'm not even going to screw, I don't want to screw this up on my phone. I'm going to pull up my iPad so I have a normal looking desktop to work with to do all these things. And I remember hitting the transfer button and just being like, please be as instant as it always is. And I refreshed my Emirates points and they showed it. And I said, hey, can you just double check up? My point should be there, right? And she was like, yep, we see it. I'm like, awesome. But in that like 10 seconds of page refresh, my heart was pounding because I was like, did I just roll points here for no reason at all? So I can utterly appreciate that sentiment and that feeling. And then also being like upset 2 days later when the points finally roll in.
I tried not to be too much of a diva about it because at the end of the day, we had had a fantastic flight to Italy. We were flying from Milan to JFK in Emirates business class. It's perfectly wonderful. But yeah, I threw a quiet tantrum in the corner of the Milan airport when it was not posting in time. But I tried not to pout on a business class flight because that's just not in good form.
So I just now have this visual of you just screaming into a travel pillow in the corner of an airport. Not, I feel like you probably don't even have a travel pillow, but I have that vision now of that happening.
I mean, it was similar to that. And like, I am not making this up. Somebody recognized me in the lounge and they were like, are you Geo Breeze Travel? I'm like, hi, I have dignity and refinement.
Oh, that's great. So, Julie, as we start to move towards wrapping up here a little bit, one last question from a luxury space, essentially. Are there any, either in general or your favorite luxury redemptions that are kind of like sweet spots that people often overlook?
My favorite luxury thing, it's not really a flight or a hotel, but if you have American Airlines Executive Platinum and you're going through Hong Kong, even if you're just flying a one world flight in economy, you have access to the Pier Lounge in Hong Kong. It's the best lounge. It's just the best. They have amazing cheesecake. They have a spa with massages and everything that I've never been able to get an appointment to because it always fills up so fast. They have a full-on dining room that's like a restaurant where you order off of menus and they bring you table service food. The vibes are not lounge-like at all. It's like a very, very rich person invited you to their summer cabin for like a small get-together where they really just want to show off how rich they are. That's just the vibes of the couches, the library, the offices, like the magazines that they have sprawled out everywhere where they're like, don't pick this up unless you're very rich. Yes. So that is the sweet spot. If you have American Airlines Executive Platinum status and you're routing through Hong Kong, if you're flying any kind of one world flight, check out the Pier Lounge.
Julia, I have to almost like mute myself every time we talk because I'm just like here cracking up laughing, which was the same way it was when we met in person and had some really great conversations at Travel More last year with a really, really cool and funny story of your trip. I think it was through Thailand.
China
years ago, which I will just tell listeners, you have to find that reel on our Instagram because it's a really funny story. I don't think anyone can watch that and not laugh hysterically. That being said, on your point about the Executive Platinum, I'm curious, is it specifically Executive Platinum or is it One World Emerald? Because we've got Platinum Pro, and so we get One World Emerald status. And so I'm curious, do we get in with that or do we got to push for the Executive Platinum?
You're right. Yes. So if you have One World Platinum, which you do with Platinum Pro, I forgot that that one also qualifies for Emerald instead of just Sapphire, you would have access as well. So you just need to show that you have One World Emerald and you have access to the Pier Lounge too.
That is something I'm going to note down. I specifically have pushed to make sure we keep Platinum Pro just for the One World Emerald, for all the benefits that come with that, plus the link to Hyatt with Globalist, but also because we're working on our honeymoon right now, which is going to be Fiji and New Zealand, and I believe we're going to be routing through Hong Kong to do that. So I am looking forward to experiencing that lounge now that you just pointed that out.
Make sure you're flying a One World flight when you go through, because if you're flying like Air New Zealand or something else that's SkyTeam, unfortunately, they won't let you in.
Got it. That's very good to know. I do know because we actually used American Airlines miles from the Hong Kong to Fiji for the flight out of Hong Kong. So I do know that at least we should get it for that alone. We'll see if we end up sticking with that flight or if we end up finding a better redemption. But as of right now, that's the flight that we've got on reserve.
Perfect.
So, Julia, one last question here before we start to wrap up. So you mentioned minimizing costs out of pocket. We talked about maximizing luxury, minimizing costs. We talked about keeping things budget, talked about cents per point. If you could only focus on one metric for all your redemptions going forward, what would it be and why?
For me, it would be that ratio of out-of-pocket costs divided by sticker price, so that I can focus on saying, here's your budget for the year. Can you 5X or 10X or 20X that and get that much more travel? Because that's really what points are for, is to help you expand your normal limits of what you'd be able to travel like, instead of just saying, oh, let me find new ways to minimize myself and freak out over every penny and every dollar. Like, you don't want to be penny wise, but pound foolish on this. So that would be the metric I track, would be that ratio.
I love that. I think that's a really great metric for anyone listening to be able to follow, because if you are a couple or a family and you've budgeted for yourself or planned for yourself that you want to spend $5,000 or $10,000 a year worth of travel, understanding how much more you can expand your travels for yourself or your family within that same budget is huge, because we can then balance both the combination of financial responsibility with living the travel life dream all together, because you're making sure, hey, look, I'm spending what I know is in my budget for travel, but I'm getting all the things that I want, or at least most of the things that I want from a travel experience, whether it's the luxury flights, the luxury hotel rooms, and everything else. So, Julia, this was absolutely fantastic. Every conversation with you is often very funny, but at the same time, very enlightening and educational. So let me ask you, how can listeners follow you? GeoBreeze Travel is a staple in the points and miles world. And so for those that haven't heard of you before, where can they find you?
I mostly hang out on Instagram at GeoBreeze Travel. You can also find me on YouTube, same handle name, GeoBreeze Travel channel there. If you have any questions for us, you can always just email me as well, Julia@geobreezetravel.com, and I can route you to the best resource from there.
Awesome, Julia. So before we wrap this up, last two things. First off, always like to ask the question, who else should we have on the show in the points and miles space?
Oh, there are so many people that you should have from the points and miles space. And I know that you've had a lot of really great guests already. I like hearing from anybody who's in the industry or who has built an app or a website that helps the greater community. So some of my favorite people that I've ever talked to on my podcast, the Built team is fantastic. So Dave Canty, head of loyalty there, or Richard Kerr, the people who make the different softwares that we use all the time. So Ian from Seats.Aero, Tim from Roam, John from Aways, Mark from statusmatch.com is fantastic as well. As I name all these people, we really need more women to create more apps and websites. So Ashley from Ashley Gets Around and Cam from our Travel Passport and Annie as well. They, I believe, are creating an app coming soon to help you travel more as well. So I'm excited for what they're launching too.
Perfect. Well, you named a laundry list of people. We'll try to start working on getting them on the show for future episodes. Julia, thank you so much. Any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
No, just thank you so much again for having me here. Always such a pleasure and so much fun to get to chat with you about points and miles whenever we can be in the same room, either physically or virtually.
Absolutely. And for listeners out there, Julia is a wealth of knowledge and wit as well. Please check out her podcast if you haven't already and follow her on Instagram. She offers some really, really great tips things along the lines of how to get out of a timeshare presentation and so much more that you can find on her social media, and a lot of knowledge and just great content overall. Julia, thanks again for being on the show today. It's been an absolute blast. And for the listeners out there, if you do have questions around cents per point, redemptions, all those different things, feel free to reach out to the creators in your circle. Obviously, would love for you to reach out to myself and my team. Julia and the GeoBreeze travel team as well will help you. And remember, on our website, we have under the tools, the point redemption calculator. So you can go on there, put in the real cash cost, the point cost, the taxes, and it will tell you exactly what your cents per point are. And if it is a good redemption purely from that value standpoint, but we, as we know, it's not always just about how many points can you get. At the end of the day, it's about the experience and everything else. So if you like this episode, please don't forget to like, subscribe, tell your friends, do all the things, and we'll catch you in the next episode. Take care, everybody.
Thanks for tuning in to the Revolutionizing Your Journey podcast, brought to you by Boldly Go. Hit that follow button so you don't miss out on new episodes. For deeper insights and to level up your travel game with our strategies, make sure to follow us on our social media platforms and sign up for our newsletter to stay in the loop. Head over to www.boldlygo.world to learn more. As DeAndre is not operating through this podcast as a fiduciary and/or financial advisor, this should not be considered personal financial advice. The information covered and posted has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The strategies and results referenced on this site, while proven, are not guaranteed. While most who apply the principles referenced will achieve similar results, you may not yourself. Your results will vary and depend on many factors that may be in or out of your control, but include factors such as your credit score, financial status, business experience, etc. It is your responsibility to consume and implement these recommendations at your own risk. We cannot be held responsible for any failure to do so.
Luxury flights and hotels can be had for free. The world of points and miles sounds too good to be true, but it's actually real, but only if you know what you're doing.
On Frequent Miler on the Air, Greg and I'm Nick, discuss all the ways to earn points and miles and use them for outsized value.
Join us every Friday for our full episodes and every Tuesday for our quick, single-topic coffee break episodes.
See you there.